This show contains language and themes that may be considered offensive to some. Please use your best judgment about whether or not you should be listening. This show contains spoilers, so if you don't want to know, you shouldn't listen. Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi Noise. I'm your host, Derek Howard. Sci-Fi Noise can be found at deliberatenoise.com/sci-fi, or if you just want to go to deliberatenoise.com, you'll find a link there to all the shows in the Deliberate Noise Network, and it's all in alphabetical order, so you can find Sci-Fi Noise. The reason I say it's all in alphabetical order is because it's not just a text link, it's also the banners for each show. Sci-Fi Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network, obviously. If you'd like to send feedback, you can email me at Derek, that's D-E-R-E-K, at deliberatenoise.com, or you can call the audio comment line at 734-331-0772, or you can just record an MP3 file and email it to me. Simple as that. And the reason I say that is because the first, this is going to be a feedback episode, so there you go. The first bit of feedback is an audio comment from Aaron Makem of Sci-Fi Dig Podcast. Now, when I do audio comments, I like to talk in between them, so I will let you listen to it, and if there's a point where I think I should jump in and make a comment or respond to something he says, and I will. And then after that, I have some comments off of the website. So, here we go.
Hey, Derek, this is Aaron from the Sci-Fi Dig Podcast, and I've been rather enjoying the Sci-Fi Noise shows. We don't always agree on everything, but that's cool. And, you know, SGU, you know, you and I had talked about this earlier, and you were a much bigger fan than I was. Season one to me was incredibly boring, and the entire season could have been told in a 2-hour movie, if you ask me. Again, just my opinion, but I am enjoying some of what they're doing. A while back I was writing down comments, and so I have a couple of them here of some of the things that, you know, I wanted to, you know, discuss. And one of those was the fact that you were not a fan of, you know, how they did away with the pregnancy in SGU. And I have to say that I'm kind of a fan of it. I understand that, you know, it was a different way to go, and that I don't necessarily, I don't believe that they were trying to avoid the topic of abortion. I think that, avoid the topic of, you know, a baby dying. I think that it's going to have ramifications. We're already seeing that now with that character, because she wants so much to believe that what happened was real, but she can't believe, she can't rely on what has taken place in her mind, because she knows, being, you know, a doctor of some sorts, that, you know, maybe it's just wishful thinking. So I'm curious to see how this all plays out, and it looks like we might be touching on that this week. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But I thought it was really interesting that we both had polarizing opinions on that topic, because I kind of liked what that character is going through, and I cannot wait to see how all that plays out. Now,
okay. They did address that. And don't forget, this is a spoiler show. What happened, for those of you who don't know or really don't care to know, the season opened with TJ basically losing the baby. But in her mind, the aliens that were from a previous planet had taken the baby for safekeeping on the planet with the people who they had left behind, like I said, on that planet. But in the episode, I believe this is the episode that he was talking about, the people who were on that planet showed up, and they didn't have the baby with them. And when they were asked about the baby, you know, she asked one of the guys, she knew point blank, you know, look, this is what happened. Is my baby okay? And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. So they just all of a sudden made it seem like it was in her mind, which I still say was just like a cheap way to go. If she's going to lose the baby, then they just should have had her lose the baby without all these scientific, not scientific, but science fiction explanation for it, right? And then it turns out that all the people who showed up from that planet ended up dying anyway, you know? And it was... that whole planet storyline just bugged me. It just really did. And the fact that they're bringing the dead baby into it, and the fact that they wrapped up that whole subplot, which was completely forgotten about. They could have left those people on the other planet and gone on with the series, and it wouldn't have been a big deal. But they decided not to. You know, and they decided to bring them back, and it's just like I said, just the whole thing just fell flat for me. Just really, really just fell flat. Anyway.
This to you as a whole, I'm enjoying it. This season is 100 times better than last season. At least this season has kept my interest, and I'm very much, I watch it every week. Last season, I would watch it every week and then probably about 10 minutes in start doing something else while it was on because it just did not hold my attention. I felt as though it was extremely boring. But I'm loving the characters. The characters have all been fleshed out. Story, not so much, but the characters, I'm digging them all. They all have their idiosyncrasies and... Rush, I mean, there are so many, that's the best character, because, you know, when he's being a douchebag, you just hate him. You hate him so much. But I love the fact that you have this character that, you know, is trying to do the right thing in a lot of ways, but he just wants to do it his way. And I'm really enjoying that part of it. One other thing I wanted to comment on, and I don't think you've brought this up very often, you know, obviously the style of shooting SGU, as you know, is something that has been borrowed from BSG. Not that BSG was the first, show to shoot in this style, but it's the first science fiction show, and they've really refined it. And although, you know, it kind of worked on there, I guess with SGU, I would like to see them get rid of it because I'm just so sick and tired of seeing it. I wish that we would get a little bit more refined camera process. And also... you know, a lot of people complained when SGU came out because it was so far removed from Stargate SG-1. And I have to say that I couldn't disagree with that more. I like the fact that it is completely different and they're trying to start fresh and they're having this... they're still able to do the crossover things. We don't have all the humor and stuff that, SG-1 had or even Atlantis had. But I like the fact that they had the balls to go ahead and try to do something different. And... I'm enjoying it. It's an enjoyable show. It's not my favorite Stargate, and I know that SG-1 is something that can... it is just such a huge mass of entertainment that it's hard to... you kind of have to really follow through with it in order to know what the heck is going on. And I'm kind of hoping that that's what happens, that they do a better job in SGU since they're trying to remove it so much from the Stargate franchise or from the other shows. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but obviously they're trying to do something a little bit different, that they need to find a way to go back. And if they're going to introduce these characters, these groups that were in the other Stargate franchises, they need to find a better way to tell their story, introduce them to us, you know, people that are viewing this for the first time. It's not like... I understand having a show like SGU and hoping people will go back and view the other Stargates and maybe get some information that way, maybe, you know, grow your audience that way. But the problem is that, you know, SG-1 is 10 seasons. That's a lot to go back and watch. And it's not all of it's good.
Okay, you know I had to hop in here. I totally agree with you. It's almost like they wanted to have a show that was stand apart from everything else in the Stargate history, but at the same time, they didn't feel confident that it was going to attract a new audience. You know, I knew nothing about Stargate except for the movie, which I thought was horrible. And I think I accidentally watched a episode of Stargate SG-1. You're probably saying, well, how do you accidentally watch something? I was over my grandmother's house helping her with stuff, and she was watching Stargate SG-1. I don't know if she just had it on because she wanted to have, you know, something on in her apartment or what. But I remember that while it was on, it just, it was, it just wasn't, I just didn't think it was very good. All right. And I have since gone back to season one, and I've tried to watch season one, and I've talked about this on the show before. Out of that entire season, there were only three episodes that were good because they were all interconnected, you know? And it kind of gave me hope for season two, but then season two went back to all these one and done stories that seemed to have like no consequence for the characters. And it's like, yeah, I'm at episode two or three of season two, and I've been there. I've been trying to watch that one episode for, I'd have to say, about 3 weeks now. I'd watch like maybe 1 or 2 minutes and just be like, ugh, and then just turn it off. So I'm just going to skip that one. Anyway, yeah, I understand what you're talking about, how they shot things different, because I really, and I've noticed that the so-called shaky cam has disappeared inside of SGU with season two. It's like they've said, you know what, we're just going to give up. We're just going to make this more like Stargate SG-1 and Stargate Atlantis. I'm assuming. I've only watched like the first part of the first episode of Stargate Atlantis because it was free on iTunes. I haven't even finished it. Yeah, and I don't get it. I was really drawn to Stargate Universe, and I have absolutely no, I'm going to flat out say I have no interest in the other ones. And now that Stargate Universe has been canceled, I don't think I'm going to go back and watch the rest of Stargate SG-1 or Stargate Atlantis. I might try. I don't know. Anyway. Sorry.
So, you know, I don't think that that's very really a viable way to do this. I think you have to tell the story. I think you need to try to make SGU more closed in a lot of ways so that people can jump in and, you know, from the beginning of the season or whatever and watch. I mean, the way it is now, you have to kind of, it's serialized enough that you kind of have to watch every episode to know exactly what's going on for the most part. I mean, there's a few standalone ones, but in order to get a handle on the characters, you have to start from the beginning. And do you really want to have to watch 10 seasons of SG-1 in order to know who all these other characters are that keep popping up, or these other factions, or these other, you know, explorers? No.
Nope.
That's just kind of silly. Anyway, you know, I could go on and on. We got to get together and do talk some sci-fi, either on your show or mine. But I love the show, Derek, and I look forward to it. And, you know, of course, I wish it was more often. But, hey, as long as you keep putting them out, I'll keep listening. Take care, buddy. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you, Aaron. Yeah, me and him do have to talk. You see, the thing is most people don't realize this, but Aaron and I, we have exchanged emails and audio comments for years now. But as far as I can remember, we've only spoken twice. Once was on the comic book round table. No, sorry, that's Cameron Rice's show. We talked on the comic book podcast crossover show. It was Bruce, Aaron, Chris Marshall, and myself. And we talked for a few minutes. And then we talked on what was, at that time, going to be the last sci-fi noise. Sci-fi dig. But then he came back because I knew he would. I told him he would. Anyway, thank you, Aaron. Let's see. Next up is a really long comment. This was back on November 27th. This is a comment for Sci-Fi Noise 12, catching up with Stargate Universe. Because if you recall, I had stopped watching Stargate Universe because of all the cheesy alien stuff in the beginning of the season. And then I just sat down and I just watched everything. I really dug it. Anyway, this is from Rick Hansen, who is the host of the Smash Tales segment on Marvel Noise. So this is going to be a lot of reading. But he, thank goodness, breaks it up into little sections. So here we go. Great episode. But I guess I can only say that because I watch SGU. I'd imagine someone who doesn't watch or doesn't like the show would be pretty confused and or disinterested. As much as it pains me to hear your constant criticism of SG1, I still enjoy hearing a different opinion so I can look back at this series I loved with a little more objectivity. Now, that's one of the reasons why I try to put really good show notes on what the topic is going to be. I know that not everybody watches Stargate Universe, so if I put Stargate Universe in the title and they listen to it and they say, oh, I'm uninterested or I don't like the show, that's on them. That is their fault. That is their problem. You know, I'm going to flat out say I don't care. You know, if somebody's going to complain because a show has Stargate Universe in the title and they still listen to it, then they just want to bitch and moan about something. Anyway, a few thoughts on your SGU coverage. One, it's good to see some strong female characters on SGU, but it's disappointing that none of them are lead characters. Sure, Ming-Na's character is the head of the civilian crew, but the real driving forces of the plot and the decision-makers aboard Destiny are Young and Rush. Since Young is the head of the military, ruling by force, it might have been nice to have Rush's role performed by a woman. This way, the character who rules by the strength of mind would have been female, whereas the present driving forces aboard Destiny have a blatant absence of estrogen. There's one huge problem with that, Rick. This show has already been compared to Battlestar Galactica. And everyone would have said that this is just like President Roslin and Adama. What was he? Admiral Adama, General, whatever he was. And they didn't need that. Plus, we wouldn't have had Robert Carlyle as Rush. No. I understand what you're saying, and I do agree with you up to a point. I personally would rather Scott, Lieutenant Scott. They could have made Lieutenant Scott's character a female. That would have been a different twist on things, because whenever there's something that needs to be done, Young has Scott do it. And if he had a woman going out there taking the point, shooting up stuff and putting people in a brig, that would have been unprecedented. I can't think of any female character who's had a strong physical presence on a show like this. You know, I mean, yeah, you can say Starbuck, but Starbuck was mostly a pilot, you know? Yeah. But then again, you know, if they Starbuck was also one of those not play by the rules type people. If they had had someone who played by the rules, but who was like a female Riker from Star Trek Next Generation, that I would have liked, you know. So that would have been that. Or if the scientist under Rush, was named Park, if she was the one who's always giving Rush, you know, alternate theories and stuff like that, that what I would have liked. But right now, the only strong female character is Camille, Ming-Na's character. And, I like her. You know, what can I say? Two, as the science part of the show is always of interest to me, I was curious to find out if the murder of Eli's girlfriend from the Lucian Alliance resulted in the death of both women on Destiny and Earth. After the murder, it was mentioned that no one knew for sure what would happen, but no follow-up ever took place. We still don't know what happened to the body and mind of the person on Earth. Yeah, they did mention that. They did say that she died. You know, so when one was killed, they were both killed. They did mention it. They mentioned it in passing, so it's not very, it's not a big thing that you missed it, because it was truly like one line, you know, like somebody entered the room, well, Dr. What's-Her-Face died back on Earth. Okay, hey, let's do this, you know, it was one of those things. They did not linger on it at all, you know. In fact, it's like almost like the only one who really gave a care It was Eli. Because even Rush was just like, oh, man. Oh, well. I got other stuff to do. So, there you go. Number three, the Lucian Alliance is not a group of aliens in the sense that they are not human. True, they are from a bunch of planets throughout the Milky Way, but they are all humans. As explained in SG-1, the defeat of the Gaud left a power vacuum in which the Lucian Alliance was born. The Gaud transported humans to every part of the galaxy many centuries ago, and they have formed their own societies, which sometimes have competing interests. Thus, the Lucian Alliance is a group made up of humans from the other planets who are fighting for what they see as their own interests. Okay, interesting. Number one, I didn't know that the Gaud was defeated, but you know, after 10 years, if the SG-1 guys couldn't defeat the Gaud after 10 years, then wow. Yeah. So, okay. I didn't know that. That is a very good explanation for why every time they go through the Stargate, they run into humanoids. That makes perfect sense now. Thank you. It seems as though that is the Valor explanation. Now, if you don't know, Valor... Okay, this is going to get very, very comic booky, very comic book logic, so you have to realize I'm talking about a DC character. All right. Back in 1985, DC decided that they were going to reboot their universes. Right? They had a crisis on Infinite Earths, which streamlined all of their different universes, because they had, you know, I think at that time they may have had 17 or 18 regular universes that they traveled to. Most people know about 3 or 4. They decided that they were going to also reboot Superman's origin. The one big thing that they really got rid of was the fact that Superman was no longer Superboy. So if he was no longer Superboy, that kind of interfered with things like the origin of the Legion of Superheroes, because they were like directly affected by Superboy, not Superman, but Superboy. There was also a character that was Mon-El, who back pre-crisis, Superboy thought was like his older brother, and he finds out, oh no, he's from a different planet. It's just like Krypton, but their weakness was not like radioactive kryptonite. Their weakness was lead. Yeah, so he ended up sending this guy Mon-El into the Phantom Zone for 1,000 years. When he came out, he was in the Legion of Superheroes, and he was sort of like, you know, Superboy when the writers didn't want to use Superboy because they had the exact same powers. However, when they got rid of Superboy, that means they had to redo his origin as well. So he became this character named Valor. Okay, he was part of the invasion because there was a bunch of aliens who were looking out for their own best interests and decided to invade Earth. And one of the characters was a Daxamite, which is the character that Mon-El was. He stayed on Earth for a while, and he was basically like another superpowered being. But what he was doing, and this is one thing I really like that the writers did, they were basically doing was setting him up as the person who was the inspiration for the Legion of Superheroes in the future. Now, what he ended up doing was taking a bunch of prisoners who had been surgically altered by some alien race, and he put them on other planets throughout the galaxy. So kind of like the Gaud, Valor did this. And then later on, he went to the Phantom Zone. When he came out, he was Mon-El. So that's long. But that's what that reminds me of taking humans and seeding them throughout the universe. But the ones that he placed, that Valor placed, they ended up directly affecting people like Brawl, who had magnetic powers, with Wynath, who had, you know, a bunch of twins and ended up having lightning powers for lightning. So he was the one who basically put everybody in, on the home planets for what would eventually become the Legionnaires. So, all right, sorry. That was very long and boring. I apologize if you don't care. But I'm not putting anything about the Legion in the title. Number four, I find it interesting how the character of Barnes keeps changing. First, he was a crazed rogue element. Now he's slowly transitioning to a part of the crew with a stronger sense of humanity and connection to his crewmates. Totally agree. Barnes was pretty much stereotypical badass who was in the brig when the whole story starts. You didn't know if he was going to be a wild card or not. But they've made him into, hey, I'm a soldier, you know? So they sort of not only redeemed that character, but they've given him a depth of humanity that I did not think would be possible in the early episodes. There was one episode recently where Chloe starts to be changed by the aliens, right? You remember how I didn't like how she was cured in the first episode. I thought it was too Deus Ex Machina. But she's still being changed, which makes more sense, you know, which I actually like a lot more. And right now she's basically in solitary confinement. You know, she's confined to her quarters. And Barnes went in and, you know, and he explained to her that if she becomes too much of a threat, then the order is going to come down that somebody's going to have to kill her. And he was letting her know it was going to be him. And she was like, you know, thank you for telling me, you know, take care of Scott. And he's like, you know it, that kind of thing. And then she stood up to give him a hug or shake his hand or something. And he just said, no, please don't ask me to do that. You know, because that would have made it even harder for him. And you could see that on his face. And it's like that subtle little moment showed a whole lot more humanity and depth of character for him than still some of the other characters. You know, I mean, that really touched me. I was like, oh, man, they both nailed that scene. That was such a good scene. Anyway, five, I've often wondered just where Eli comes from, figuratively. Here was this gamer slacker with no ambition who got recruited because he solved a video game. I'm sure it was mentioned sometime, but did he go to college? How did he get so smart? How young is he? He seems more mature than a high school / college gamer, but he's also very naive. I enjoy his character, but how did he get to the point where he's telling the other scientists what to do? Now, I'm not 100% positive. I think that he may have gone to college, like maybe a year or two, but he was kind of like bored and dropped out, or he had to drop out because of money issues or something like that. And he was trying to, you know, and he was playing this game and he solved a puzzle, which is something straight out of The Last Starfighter, you know. Because in this Last Starfighter, if you got past a certain level, then of course you were going to be, you know, recruited to the Starfighter Alliance or whatever it was called, because you had the hand eye coordination, that kind of stuff, to defeat the aliens. But with him, they put this with Eli though, they put a math equation that Rush was having trouble with in this online game, and he figured it out. You know, and the reason he's smart is because, you know, people hate to hear this, but some people are just born smart. You know, my son Steven is very smart. You know, is he Eli smart? I don't know. I'd love it if he was, but I don't know. So I think that he's really young. I want to say he's like 19 or 20, but he's a gamer. And, you know, when you're on television, you're basically a shut-in. You have no social skills, or if you have social skills, they're very, very weak. It's like, you know, just like comic book guys on TV all wear glasses or are fat. So it's just how it is. And it says, how did he get to the point where he's telling the other scientists what to do? he proved himself to Rush when he solved that equation. And so when Rush gave him increased responsibilities and not these other guys, they're like, okay, well, this is the boss's golden boy, so I guess we have to listen to what he says. And it also doesn't hurt that a lot of times he's right, you know. So, and not just Rush, but also Young. So when, and Camille, you know, so when you have like the three people who are in charge of the ship turning to this one guy, yeah, you better listen to him. It's just politically intelligent thing to do. All right. Six. Lastly, Doctor Who is not sci-fi. I've always looked at science fiction to be along the lines of Ray Bradbury or Robert Heinlein's work, where science is the impetus and the environment of the story. And the plot is centered on the human condition reaction to the science. Maybe you can enlighten me on where a story's limits would be or the criteria it must meet to be considered science fiction. And this is the question that Rick put forth. It really took me a long time to think of a good answer for. And I don't really have one other than to say there are, how can I put this? Yeah, see, after all this time, I can't really think of a good way to verbalize it. But Doctor Who has a science fiction setting. It has science fiction characters. This past season with Matt Smith and Kieran Gillen, it was not telling science fiction stories, okay? I mean, maybe that's what I should have said, but it's really not telling science fiction stories, so that's why I can't say it's the best science fiction show on TV, you know? Simply because, it just because you have all these elements doesn't mean that it's, you know, the total package. All right, sorry about that. So yeah, that's what I mean. Okay, if you have a science fiction setting, let's say you're on a spaceship, okay, you had science fiction characters, including aliens. All right, you have aliens, but every story that you told was a basically an episode of Glee with the same, you know, with science fiction characters. Does that make it a science fiction show just because it's a science fiction setting with science fiction characters? I don't think so. I don't say so. And with Doctor Who, it was more of a horror thriller season. Okay. And so maybe that's how I should have put it. You know, this past season wasn't very science fiction-y to me. There's only so many times you can see, you know, creepy stuff going bump in the night, you know? So, anyway, I still stand by that Stargate Universe is a better science fiction show than Doctor Who. Best one out there. All right, now, finally, he wraps up. Thanks for the show. I always enjoy listening to it, even if half the time I'm in disagreement with you. But I agree with the other half, so we're cool, right? To tell you the truth, I like it when people disagree, but they have valid points, okay? Because if I were to say Doctor Who is not a strictly science fiction show to me, and you say, oh, screw you, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay, you haven't given me any reason to think that you're anything other than a foul-mouthed idiot, okay? But you have said, okay, this is what I think, and this is why I think this, and therefore I appreciate that. You know, if you just said, hey, you went, wow, great episode, you're totally right on this, you're totally right on that, you're totally right on this. All right, you know what, come on now. Jeez, at least move over to the other cheek. Anyway. Since it's part of your network, I would appreciate your feedback on something I contribute to on a regular basis, namely Marvel Noise. I've been doing the Smash Tales segment for over a year, and I've always wondered if you've heard it and what you think. Best of the family. Kind regards, Rick Hansen. I have heard it. I don't really do critiques of the shows or segments in the Comic Book Noise family or the Deliberate Noise Network. Simply because if I didn't like it, I would let you know. Okay. I mean, that sounds... sounds kind of bad, but if it's unlistenable, I will let you know. I'm kind of gun shy because I've lost shows in the network. Some because of a not completely favorable feedback, and others because I didn't give enough feedback. So, yeah, so I don't know. So it's a balancing act. So if you ask me, I have heard Smash Tales. I do like it, you know. Sometimes I'm going to keep my mouth shut. But there we go. All right, now there's one more comment. And now he's going to ask me what was that. Now I'll respond in email, but I'm not going to put you out there. Anyway, there's one more that he posted a few days ago. This is also in the Catching Up with Stargate Universe comment section, which you can find at deliberatenoise.com/sci-fi. I learned today that Stargate Universe has been canceled, and the news filled me with a great sadness. Me too, but for a totally different reason. And I'll tell you why before I go on with the rest of Rick's comment. The reason that it filled me with great sadness is because it was one of my favorite shows on TV. You know, there's some stuff I didn't like about it, but overall it was consistently a good watch. All right. There's a show called Terriers, which is not science fiction. It was one of my favorite shows as well. Once again, a consistently good watch. Life Unexpected is a show that I've liked for the past 2 years, and it has also been canceled. Well, it's about to be canceled. It's one of those deals where they haven't said whether or not they're going to cancel it, but the the male lead on the show has already signed a talent agreement with CBS. So, if you don't have him on the show, yeah. Anyway, so when I lose, like, three of my favorite shows, three shows that I watch every week, it's kind of a bummer, you know? And then you have Stargate Universe, which I thought and I still think is the best out of the Stargate period. History, and then Stargate history, right? I will preface that by saying I still haven't gotten past season 2 of Stargate SG-1 or past the first half of Stargate Atlantis episode 1. However, it's better in the movie, right? Yeah, so that, I mean, that's just bums me out because this was a quality show and it could not get. It could not attract and keep an audience, you know. Maybe it's because it wasn't dumbed down, monster of the week type stuff, one and done stuff. And I'm gonna say right now, that's not a condemnation on the other two Stargates. Because, like I said, what I've seen of the first Stargate, I can see potential there. Just still that the vast majority of the episodes I've seen, was it 19 out of 22 episodes I don't like. All right, but those three were great. But there are other shows on sci-fi that are one and done. You know, there's no ramifications from one episode to the next, and there's one show on there that's very, very popular that is so boring. Oh my god, I don't know how anybody can watch it. And there's another one that just didn't grab me at all, you know. And then of course there's Eureka and Warehouse 13. Warehouse 13, that's mostly one and done, but that's how the show was designed. That it makes more sense for it to be one and done than anything else. Eureka is sort of the same way. You know, it makes a little bit more sense for it to be one and done, but it's not always. So, I mean, yeah. So, there are a lot of other things that I would have cut on sci-fi. And a number of I would have also cut off some of those lame-ass movies that they make, and I would have moved it over to the Stargate Universe budget, but that's just me. Anyway, this is the end of an era of science fiction that sometimes took itself seriously, sometimes didn't, but always threw something new at the viewer. I was a much younger man when Stargate the movie was released, and I can't say I ever found it to be more than mediocre. And that is that's a lot more praise than I would give it. When Stargate SG-1 first came to cable television, I had no cable. Thus, I had to wait for the two-year-old reruns to come to local stations at around 2 in the morning on a work night. Fortunately, this show really struck a chord in my fanboy mind, as did a little program starring Kevin Sorbo called Andromeda, although Andromeda never lived up to the promise of its potential. I am definitely going to talk about Andromeda because I love those first couple of episodes, those first couple of seasons of Andromeda. I really, really dug it. But that we talk about later. As the years went on, I became totally engrossed in the history of the Stargate universe and the relationships between O'Neill Jackson, Carter Teal'c, and the folks at Stargate Command, not to mention the characters in Stargate Atlantis and now SGU. These shows have brought me countless hours of enjoyment. I'm sure you could argue that the writing is lackluster, perhaps on the mindless fluff side of television. Maybe you think the characters are too flat and that there isn't a driving storyline you can sink your teeth into. I always felt that the SG-1 stories of exploration and ongoing fight against the system lords was a perfect mix of Star Trek and X-Files. Lots of good one-and-done stories combined with an overlapping crusade to free the galaxy from its eons-long oppressors. Star Trek and X-Files. The characters were extremely likable, and maybe they could have been more dynamic. And maybe, excuse me, the characters were extremely likable, while maybe they could have been a bit more dynamic, and I found a genuine enjoyment in their kitschy interactions. All right. Perhaps I am easy to amuse. Perhaps I lean towards the simplistic. Regardless, I will miss every incarnation of Stargate, even though the world of Asgardian aliens, FTL drives, and gold four-headed warriors will be a part of me forever. I know you'll never love this series in its entirety as much as I do. Rather than argue the merits of SG-1 and Stargate Atlantis with you, I feel lucky to have enjoyed it during its run, and I hope whatever comes along next in the world of sci-fi offers you as much enjoyment. And everybody should listen to Smash Tales on the Marvel Noise podcast. Like I said, I do not like the first few seasons so far of SG-1, and I really can't speak with any sort of authority on Stargate Atlantis, because I refuse to judge any show on half of an episode, all right? And the reason I've only watched half of an episode is because I wanted to watch Stargate SG-1 before I got into Stargate Atlantis. You know what I should have done? Now that I think about it, I should have done what I did with the Evil Dead movies. Because the first Evil Dead movie I saw was Army of Darkness. And then I saw Evil Dead 2, and then I saw Evil Dead. That's what I should have done. I should have gone backwards in time. I should have watched SGU, then I should have watched SGA, and then I should have watched SG-1. I might have had a greater appreciation for it, but maybe not, but you know, I don't know. Anyway, I do not fault anybody for liking SG-1 and Stargate Atlantis, okay? I just wanted to say that. I may bust chops, but fact of the matter is I didn't like it. I don't like the SG-1 that I've seen so far. If other people like it, hey, more power to you, right? What I don't like is the people who like it to the point where they wouldn't give SGU much of a chance simply because it wasn't like SG-1. You know, to me, that's not cool, you know. Or when they complain so much about Stargate Universe that you can tell that the producers started caving into pressure and started making things more like these older shows, you know, and that, to me, that's just not very smart. Because you do stuff like that, it's like, when you don't grow your franchise, when you keep telling the same type of stories, you end up with Law and Order, or you end up with CSI. Law and Order and CSI with all their different incarnations, right? Now you're probably thinking, oh, but I like Stargate. I like Law and Order. I like CSI. And yeah, those shows are very popular, right? But they're very popular for one big reason. There's no real consequence from one episode to the next, you know. Babylon 5 changed that for science fiction. You know, they just did. Now, I'm not saying that you have to have like a whole 4-year storyline like Babylon 5 did, and I will stick with 4 years because year number 5 was just tacked on. But there should be something, you know. If Daniel Jackson or O'Neill get their minds taken over in one episode, that's the type of stuff that should come back and haunt them later on. It's like, whoa, you know what? I don't want to lose control. You know, I don't want somebody to take over, you know. You know, if you get your mind taken over, and I should say you get your body taken over and your mind is still doing whatever. Number one, you should probably never ever drink again because you don't want to lose that kind of control. And, you know, little subtle things like that I could really get into. But it's just like, hey, yeah, we helped save this planet. All right, well, we're on to the next planet. And it's like, you know, they go rushing into stuff. It's like, hey. And then I'm up here watching thinking, didn't you guys have like a similar issue like, oh, I don't know, 2 episodes ago? You know, why are you doing this? Jeez. Gosh, get a prime directive, right? Prime directive number one, don't be an asshole going and just shooting up everything. Oh, well, anyway, if you want to send some feedback on Stargate or anything else, because, yes, I realize that this has probably been a very Stargate-centric podcast so far. You know, it's weird because it used to be Defying Gravity that I talked about every episode. Now it seems like it's Stargate that I talk about every episode. But now the Stargate universe has been canceled. I guess I'll have to find something else, you know, to obsess about. Anyway, thanks for listening. But if you want to send some feedback, go ahead and send it to Derek, is D-E-R-E-K, at DeliberateNoise.com. Or, you know, and you can also email audio files to that email address, or you can go ahead and call 734-331-0772. Thank you for listening, and I will be back as soon as I have something really good to talk about. Come on, we're gonna see.